Les colloques du Collège de France.
Okay, so thank you for coming back, and it's a pleasure to continue with Nicoletta Petridou from the EMBL in Heidelberg. Nicoletta is a developmental biologist who is interested in many problems about collective dynamics of cells in embryos, and she will talk about timing, noise, and collectives in embryos. Thank you, Nicoletta, for joining.
Thank you so much for having me here today. I'm very excited. It's my first time here, and I'm already very pleased with all what we heard today. So I decided to talk about basically cellular timing and how this can affect collective behavior of embryonic tissues. So as most of us know, embryogenesis, the transformation of the single cell fertilized oocyte into an organism, involves massive reorganization of cells. And I will just show this movie from our newly acquired species in the lab, the annual killifish, which is a type of a fish, a teleost, that undergoes this type of reorganization in embryogenesis, but to the extreme levels. I don't know if you have seen something like this before, let me know. So you will have this pluripotent cell mass sitting on top of a huge yolk cell, and you will see that this mass will start to spread to engulf the yolk, but the cohesive tissue will just break apart, and you will have these single cells kind of swimming around the yolk. And then these are still pluripotent, but at some point they will start changing identity, their cell fate, and they will start aggregating in a random spot, or we think it's a random spot, form again a cohesive tissue, and then this tissue will become actually the precursor of the embryo with the head, the somites, and the trach, and really start looking like a multicellular organism. So tissue reorganization happens in embryogenesis, in disease, everywhere. And what is very nice in embryogenesis, it has very precise patterns in space and time. So the question is how such deformability patterns, because basically the tissue has to deform to reorganize, are regulated in embryogenesis. We know that, of course, a key regulator is mechanics, tissue mechanics, where developing tissues can be approached as materials that deform based on some local physical rules. And within the last decades, there has been actually demonstrated that developing tissues can change their deformability in a similar way that inanimate matter undergoes what is called phase transitions. So like the melting of an ice cube that becomes from a solid to a liquid. So in physical systems, such phase transitions that we're all familiar with are usually controlled by abiotic control parameters. This could be temperature, this could be pressure. And what is a very characteristic behavior is this abrupt switch in the phases of deformability. That if you have an ice cube, you know that even if you change temperature for a very long range of values, if all of them are below 0 degrees Celsius, the ice cube will still stay solid. But there is a critical value in temperature around 0 degrees that suddenly these water molecules will have more degrees of freedom and then start kind of moving around, density drops, and then basically we have the emergence of this liquid phase. And remarkably, many tissues can undergo these upper changes in deformability, but the regulation now is, of course, not abiotic, but it comes from the constituents, so the components, the cells themselves. And there has been a series of like enormous amount of work finding critical points in several cell control parameters that describe the interactions between the cells, like density, motility, adhesion, contact surface tensions, connectivity, and etc. And basically, by quantitatively linking the changes in the cell-cell interactions to macroscopic measures of tissue scale deformability, this could be rigidity, viscosity, one can construct phase diagrams that show this nonlinear behavior and abrupt changes in deformability, let's say from solid-like and not easily deformable to fluid-like and much more deformable tissues that happens at critical points of these control parameters. And I will get back more to it later. But what I would like to emphasize is that such phase transitions have been shown to be highly controlled in space and time in embryogenesis. And this happens across several species. And they facilitate key morphogenetic movements. This could be tissue spreading, folding, elongation, or segregation. So they are becoming quite abundant in development. Okay. Now, however, this extreme similarity that tissue have tissues have to inanimate matter. Living tissues, we know that they challenge many assumptions of inanimate matter. And we've heard already a few of them. The first one is that, of course, the components consume energy. They use resources for producing ATP, which then, of course, they consume to form all these functions, so motility, division, sulfate acquisition. And over the years, there has been a lot of work that actually we incorporated such selectivity to theoretical models and start approaching tissues as what we call a form of active matter. But on top of that, the components, what we know and we've heard in many talks today, is that they are very heterogeneous. We know that cells exist in different states. These states can be mechanical, transcriptional, growth states, or metabolic states. So these intrinsic states that we heard in the morning. And we also know that cells operate many times on autonomous timescales. And this is due to internal biochemical clocks. This could be, for instance, the cell cycle oscillator. It defines, for instance, the cell cycle state and how fast the tempo of cell division would be. It could be metabolic rates. We know that different species have different metabolic rates, and this could, the reaction kinetics have different speeds. And this could actually change the dynamics of the cellular behaviors. Moreover, such timescales are actually frequently inherited, so they are not momentarily in the tissue. And that means, so they're inherited through the lineage, meaning that over longer timescales, cellular timing may have unpredictable or, let's say, not easily intuitive effects on living matter. So what I would like to address today is how does the distribution of cellular timing within a tissue can shape active matter. And I will focus on the cell cycle clock, as I said, that defines the cell duplication rate. And in general, cell divisions are actually one of the key controllers of the tissue mechanical states. There are several examples that they can promote both solidification and fluidization. Here I will focus more on the fluidization, because they have been shown in several cases that they can promote remodeling of cell-cell contacts that could kind of soften the tissues, allow them to deform, and that's why they behave like fluid-like materials. This is an example of tissues that are kind of have an architecture that is near confluency, where what we have shown before is that during mitotic rounding in cell division, cell-cell contacts become smaller, and eventually some of them can disassemble completely. If you have fewer cell-cell contacts, then the cells can rearrange more easily, and thus the tissue can be more deformable. Another example is for fully confluent tissues, where during cytokinesis, you can induce T1 transitions, which is a specific type of cell rearrangement that could also cause rearrangements in general of the cells and tissue fluidization. But despite these momentary effects, what we know is that in proliferative active matter, divisions don't only, let's say, change the degrees of freedom, they are regulating, for instance, packing or topology of cells, but we have this kind of autocatalytic growth that is needed for cell divisions, which could amplify some inherent heterogeneities in the tissue or fluctuations. And these heterogeneities may actually even be inherited through the lineages. So what we hypothesize is that this cellular timing variability within a tissue may not just be some stochastic drift. It may follow fundamentally different dynamics. And we want to understand if this has some unique consequences for the collective mechanical behavior. So this is the project that I will present experimentally. This was driven by my PhD student, Lena, and this was a very interdisciplinary project. We collaborated with a group of Bernard Corominas Mutra on modeling stochastic dynamics and energy consuming features, and with a group of Bart Schmitz, where we collaborated on simulating embryos as 3D active foams to understand their deformability. So the system I will be focusing on is another fish. This is a very established model system, the zebrafish early embryo. And this is just basically a few, maybe an hour upon fertilization, where it has a very stereotypical developmental trajectory that is shared basically across many metazoans. That early development has this characteristic of reductive cell divisions, where the daughter cells will have half the size of the mother cells. So we don't have growth of the cells in early development. Now, these divisions, as you will see, they're very rapid, and synchronous, but eventually the cell cycles will slow down and desynchronize. And this, let's say, transition from rapid and synchrony to slowing down and asynchrony is called, is the phenomenon of mid-blastula transition. And once this is complete, the embryo will be ready to specify and undergo gastrulation. So here is when we quantify these properties, how it looks. For instance, before the mid-blastula transitions, this is the cell cycle length, this is the duration of the cell cycle. You see that early generations have very fast cycles. After the mid-blastula transition, the cell cycle elongates. And actually, if you see, it elongates quite dramatically in a faster than exponential manner. Eventually, you will see that it starts plateauing. That means all the cells will eventually acquire the same cell cycle length. There is a cap because they cannot elongate their cell cycles forever. And then they will have kind of a stable cell cycle at gastrulation. Now, if we block the heterogeneity in the cell cycle length, this we express as standard deviation, but it's the exact same trends if it's standard deviation divided by the mean, or for the variance, we see the same trends. We also have actually quite some explosive dynamics. So we have very little heterogeneity at the beginning, and after MBT, we have this really, really fast explosion of heterogeneity or variability. But then, as you see, at a certain generation, then it starts dropping, and this is because the cell cycle length starts to plateau, and as I said, all the cells will acquire the same cell cycle, so that's why we start dropping the heterogeneity. Okay, so this is what happens at generational time. However, the embryo develops at chronological time, and of course at the early divisions, where they're purely synchronous, generational time will coincide with chronological time. However, when we have the desynchronization, what happens, the increase in the heterogeneity in the cell cycle length, we will induce basically desynchronization of the cell cycles. And this is what you see by labeling the, in red here, the mitotic cells, that you see that we have heterogeneity. Now, this desynchronization, what basically generates is an overlap of generations, where you start seeing generations mixing from the 12, 13, 14, 15 generations start to mix together. Now, the onset of morphogenesis, we know that it happens during this heterogeneous period. So this is when we have the first mixing of the generations, and the first collective morphogenetic movement is this spreading of the blastoderm on top of the yolk cell. It's called doming. And basically what we have previously shown is that for this spreading to happen, you require softening of the tissue, a fluidization of the tissue, but it has a very specific temporal pattern. At the onset of spreading, we have fluidization of the tissue, and by the time that the embryo is ready to gastrulate, we have rigidification, meaning that the tissue became, again, very stiff and less deformable. Okay, now these mechanical changes that I told you can be actually described using phase transition frameworks, specifically here, this rigidity percolation theory that I will briefly introduce. And the beauty of it is that we can identify it from live imaging data by basically zooming in the embryo and analyzing cell topology. So this theory defines a critical point in connectivity, and this is for any network, it doesn't have to be a cellular network, but basically this connectivity expresses the average contact of the average number of contacts per cell, or it could be the average number of links per node in any network. And what happens is that the rigidity of the tissue abruptly switches at this connectivity. So the basis behind is actually purely structural. So the idea is that every time a node acquires a link, it absorbs the degrees of freedom of this node. But what matters is not how many small rigid clusters we have that will not be able to be deformable, but what is the size of the largest cluster in a network that it cannot be deformed. And the reason is that by, of course, having no links, everything is deformable, but eventually, let's say, having very, you will reach a critical point that maybe just having one more link here and another link here and here, we suddenly lock the whole structure into a large non-deformable element, and this will not allow the tissue to be deformed. So if we apply this framework to the live imaging data where we also track cell cycles, what we see is that before this onset of dawning, the tissue has this very large rigid cluster that we know that is, let's say, solid-like, and this also happens just before gastrulation starts, that is again rigid. But where the dawning starts, what we see is a disappearance of this rigid cluster, so it becomes very small. And if we look at which point of the generation mix happens, it's actually at the crossing of generation 13-14. This is the first time that the tissue will cross this critical point in connectivity, and it will create an abrupt fluidization of the tissue and then a rigidification coming back. But now we can go and ask at which levels of cell cycle length and heterogeneity this transition happens. And what was very striking to us is that this happens at the maximum levels of cell cycle length standard deviation in this heterogeneity. So when the cells are most desynchronized from each other is exactly when the tissue crosses the critical point and fluidizes as a whole. So this now, it was a very nice quantitative correlation. So what we ask, could it be that actually the population level cell cycle length heterogeneity acts as a timer for this tissue phase transition? So what the embryo reads is actually not the individual cell cycle length of each cells, but the population level heterogeneity in the cell cycle length that then we kind of mechanically prepare the embryo for this transition. So to address this, what we needed to do, we will take a little bit of a detour from mechanics, but we needed to identify the source of this heterogeneity and be able eventually to manipulate it. And this took us actually quite a few years to get into it. To identify the source of the heterogeneity, we need to identify what elongates the cell cycle, because we need to understand why some cells elongate more than others. And it has been, this is like a big field in developmental biology, and where over the years, several molecular mechanisms have been proposed to trigger cell cycle elongation. So the idea is that some cell-to-cell differences in such of this mechanism might be responsible of this observed variability. So this include, basically, we have degradation or consumption of many maternal determinants. This could be proteins that come from the mother that allow the cell cycles to proceed, and we know that they are being consumed. And during this consumption, what happens eventually is that the zygotic genome gets activated, and then this, factors that are missing are there kind of catching up, and that's why the embryo continues to divide. So, which is the source? We don't know, because each species actually has been shown to have different source triggering the cell cycle elongation. In some species, it's, replication factors. In other species, it's DNTPs. In others, it's histones. In others, it's actually specific exhaustion of energy reservoirs like metabolites or lipid droplets, and etc. But what it seems that is very conserved across species is this nucleus-to-cytoplasmic ratio, that the idea that the DNA is actually exponentially increasing because you have these divisions, but the cell size becomes smaller and smaller and smaller, so the pool of cytoplasmic components is getting limited. So then you reach a specific ratio of nucleus-to-cytoplasmic ratio where things run out. So if this is then depending on resources, we said, okay, let's make a first test. What we will do, we will make half of the embryo share cytoplasmic resources and half of the embryo not. So to do this, we inhibited cytokinesis only in a small portion of the embryo by injecting an inhibitor of Aurora B. And then what you will see here, that in the same embryo, you will see cells that they have compartments. So each cell will define its cell cycle length based on the resources that it has in its cytoplasm. Whereas here you will see a syncytium where the cells will share resources, or nuclei will share resources. And when you quantify, you will see that actually the cell cycle elongation happens in both conditions, but only in the case that we have compartments, we start having increase in the heterogeneity of the cell cycle length. So just supporting basically this hypothesis that if you share your cytoplasm with your neighbors, then the cell cycle length will be actually very similar to it. Okay, so Is now this differential resource allocation really sufficient to explain the dynamics that we quantify in the embryo? So for this, we developed a mathematical model to capture the elongation and the variability in the cell cycle lengths. So this model has two assumptions. First, that we have finite maternal resources that are being continuously depleted. As I said, the zygotic genome is still inactive, so you don't produce more resources, so you're being constantly consuming. But also that their duplication rate will follow Mihalis-Menten kinetics, where maternal resources that are related to the cell cycle can act as a substrate. And such dynamics, basically what they state is that if you have resource abundance, biochemical reactions that are needed for duplication will be very fast, whereas under resource limitation, they will slow down dramatically. It's not linear. You will slow down dramatically. Now, actually, this function of slowing down comes from an empirical law. This is Monod's law, which is widely used to explain growth rates in microbial communities in ecological contexts, but you have resource depletion. Now, we validated such assumptions in zebrafish. We did live imaging of maternally deposited histones, and you will see that indeed, early stages, you have abundance of cytoplasmic histones, but as the DNA is increasing, you need more histones to wrap it around. So you see that this cytoplasmic signal, it goes down. This is actually a linear consumption of the histones, but if you see there, the kinetics, they do follow Mihalis-Menten kinetics. Okay, now together these two ingredients, actually what they predict is a hyperbolic growth of the cell cycle length. So hyperbolic is something that is faster than exponential, and as I've shown you before, the cell cycle length is actually faster than exponential, and it grows towards what is called a mathematical singularity. That means within a finite time, this function, if we were to continue like this, it would reach infinity. Whereas exponential, the function could keep growing indefinitely. And this is actually what we see in the experiments, but remember that here we have a cap, so we had to cap basically the cell cycle elongation, because we know that cells, they would not elongate their cell cycles forever. So we put a cap in the function, but this is like a hyperbolic growth. And you can also see that because if cell cycles reach infinity, that means the duplication reach, if it were to continue hyperbolically, would reach zero, which is where the singularity would basically cross. But we know that this doesn't happen, of course, because at generation 14th, the cell cycles acquire a maximum cap, and we know that this is because of the zygotic genome being active and then kind of compensating for the resources that we have lost. So what we basically propose here is actually a redefinition of this mid-blastular transition that is not a distinct developmental program that will separate this fast synchronous and slow asynchronous division, but you actually have a continuum regulation where what is considered pre-MBT will correspond to a regime of resource abundance and fast kinetics, whereas post-MBT will correspond to a regime of resource limitation or starvation, let's say, and slowing down of the kinetics. Now, this means that from the same principle, we should be able to also explain the heterogeneity in the cell cycle lengths. And this hypothesis basically is the following, that if cell divisions are not entirely symmetric, and daughter cells have slightly unequal cell volumes, but the contact of the DNA is the same, then we have a difference in the resource concentration, in the cytoplasmic resource concentration. Now, the beauty of this is that such differences will exist from the beginning, but under resource abundance, it really does not matter. You may have two cells with stochastic differences in resource allocation, but if they are in abundance, biochemical reactions are as fast as possible, so cell cycles will appear synchronous, but the exact same differences under resource limitation will create very big differences in the duplication rates. That's why we start seeing asynchrony in the cell cycles. Okay, to test this, what we explore is if we can add a stochastic component in this mathematical model of the cell cycle length based on the cell volume differences would capture these dynamics of the cell cycle length variability. And we know that actually cell cycle length variability indeed is not just a stochastic drift. You will see that it explodes much more from a Brownian shift. But if now it's coupled to the hyperbolic growth of the cell cycle length, then we have an increase and dramatic increase in the cell cycle length variability. So we did this by introducing this component epsilon next to the noise, to the Brownian shift. And then basically what it does, it links resource concentration to the cell volume. And we can search, okay, where is our data falling? It falls to an epsilon value of 0.18. So this corresponds to 11 to 12% volume differences between the cells. And what was very striking to us, if we were going to and quantify cell volumes of daughter cells, we will see their average difference indeed is around 12%, showing that basically the cell size differences could reflect the resource differences, and this can explain the dynamics of the variability. Now, the coupling of the cell volume differences to the hyperbolic growth generates these very large differences in duplication rates that are highly, basically unlikely to be resolved just stochastically in the next generations, meaning that eventually we will create a very structured temporal dynamics in the embryo, where the fastest mother will give rise to the fastest daughter and the fastest granddaughter cell. So, and this is also what we see in the theory when you simulate trajectories, but also in the embryo, we have that if a cell is the fastest, then all its progeny will stay the fastest, and they're very nicely ranked. And this could also explain why basically sibling cells have more similar cell cycle lengths to each other than non-sibling cells. So, as a result, inheritance of the coupling of the deterministic cell cycle length and stochastic difference in resource allocation can explain the dynamics of the cell cycle heterogeneity of the early embryos. Okay, now what is the inherited component? So the way that the information here is inherited, as suggested by the model, is the cell size, the cell volume. So we did challenge this experimentally. So we did, for instance, cell size more similar to each other. To do this, we inhibited polokinase because it has been previously shown that that in zebrafish, there are slightly asymmetric divisions due to some centrosomes being bigger towards the animal pole, and this is dependent on polokinase. And we inhibited that to see if we can generate divisions that are more symmetric. But we also wanted to increase the asymmetry in the cell divisions, and for this we did some microsurgery techniques where we aspirated in half of the embryo at the one cell stage resources. This created an asymmetric division at the two cell stage with a smaller daughter cell on the one side, and as a control we aspirated the same amount but from the center of the embryo. And this, we measured cell volumes, and this was actually quite successful. So in the polokinase inhibition, the variability in the cell volumes drops, whereas in the aspiration, asymmetrically aspirated embryos, the variability in the cell sizes, it increases. And indeed, actually, this is sufficient to change the variability in the cell cycle lengths, where in the more symmetric cell divisions, we have cells with more similar cell cycle lengths, where in the more asymmetric cell divisions, we have cells with a more dissimilar cell cycle lengths, and this also changed the temporal order of these embryos, where in low cell size heterogeneity, we have more scrambled lineages, and high cell size heterogeneity, we have more separated lineages. So this what shows is that you need small but inherited cell size differences to drive these large cell cycle length differences through generations. Now, this raises a question of how this heterogeneity affects the embryogenesis. I will go fast. Okay. So, okay, good. So basically, the hypothesis is that maybe the variability in the cell cycle length can determine which and how many contacts are remodeled. And as I told you, we have that during cell division, the contacts are remodeled, but what we see is that actually daughter cells stay very close to each other. So that means this inherited cell size function could create some timing differences, could create some spatial trends in the division events. So to address this, we actually track cell divisions in time, we rank them in time, and then we check what are the distances between them. And when we plot, I will have to go quickly through this, I'm sorry. Basically, if we don't track them sequentially in time, we get the distribution of the distances between the cell divisions, but if we track them in time, we also get a different distribution. So if these two differ between them, that means we have some special trends. So we compute the differences between the two distributions, and indeed we find that in control embryos, you have some spatial trends in division. When the cell division timing is more similar, these spatial trends are actually less variable. And when division timing is more dissimilar, then the spatial trends is actually much more variable. Okay, this shows that this timing heterogeneity translates into spatial heterogeneity. Okay, so what happens in the remodeling? We can actually go and quantify this, because locally the cell will challenge the cells of contact. We can quantify this using the Young-Dubré relation, which is it defines this adhesive parameter alpha that can be directly calculated by the angle that is formed at the cell-cell contact, and is actually very intuitive for telling us how strong the cells attach to each other. And we have previously shown that actually this alpha value acts as a critical point of this rigidity transition. And specifically, once the contact surfaces go down, so the adhesion increases between cells, there is a sudden formation of new contacts that could induce a percolation transition. So locally, if we quantify, indeed, in all of these conditions, mitotic cells have higher alpha, so lower cell-cell adhesion between the cells. So all of these cases can reduce locally cell-cell contact adhesion strength. But globally, there is a difference that only in the wild-type case, there is a momentary, like a tiny moment that the tissue as a whole crosses this critical point of alpha that acts as a control parameter, and this could explain why we have fluidization only in one time point. So I think this will make it much clearer. So basically what it seems is that the heterogeneity in division timing, it tunes the proximity of the tissue to this critical point of the rigidity transition. So we tested this both in silico via simulations and in vivo by doing this cell size manipulation experiments. And in silico, we created this 3D active foam of model where we introduce the measurements in the relative surface tensions in metaphase versus interphase. But we can have this model evolving based on the cell cycle lengths that come from the mathematical model. And as you can see here, by tuning this epsilon parameter, we can find exactly the parameter that will give us the synchronicity and the crossing of generations that happens in the wild-type case. Now, the beauty of this is that we can do it over a range of epsilon values. We can have values that is closely matching the wild-type embryos. And in this case, as you can see, we have one-time fluidization, one crossing of the critical point, and recovery and rigidification. However, when we have the developmental rate exactly the same, but we make the epsilon lower, so we have more synchronicity in cell divisions, what we see is repeated rounds of fluidization, rigidification, where the critical point is crossed earlier and is actually crossing all the time. So we have some signatures of mechanical instability. Whereas when we increase epsilon, and we increase the cell cycle length heterogeneity, then we actually, the embryo fails to fluidize, it never crosses a critical point. And the same, of course, is for our wild types. In the wild type, we have one crossing of the critical point, one round of fluidization rigidification. In the polokinase inhibition with lower cell cycle length variability, we have earlier fluidization and unstables, these flip-flop patterns. Whereas in the asymmetric aspiration that we have higher cell cycle length heterogeneity, we fail to cross this critical point. And last slide. Basically, what this means is that the wild-type embryos operate in an intermediate regime of heterogeneity. And could this mean that there is an optimum where there's also a regime of robustness where the wild-types can resist some level of heterogeneity and still do morphogenesis and fluidization at the same time? And indeed, if we simulate across many levels of epsilon, but you will also see in our experimental data, what we see is that wild-type embryos, there is a level of noise that they can tolerate, and the mechanical transition can happen once or at the right developmental stage, whereas when we deviate away from this optimum, then things could happen multiple times, so we lose mechanical stability, or happen at the wrong developmental stage. Okay, so to summarize, basically we find that that reaction kinetics of duplication rates kind of constrain what is the duplication rate. And we have this regime of resource limitation where heterogeneity comes in. Now stochasticity in cell size, in resources that translate to stochasticity in cell sizes, creates this optimum variability that gives us the right developmental mechanical transition. And what is very nice here is that it seems that we do not need any feedback architectures for tuning the tissue at the critical point, but it seems to come from evolutionary constraints. Because if we went and look through the literature across metazoans, this hyperbolic growth of the cell cycle length can explain their cell duplication rates. Basically, the growth of the cell cycle length seems to be conserved. And this is, I guess, because it comes from resources that are being limited, enzymes work in a certain way, and this is the only way that the cell cycle length will elongate. And depending on noise, this will create the heterogeneity that you don't need to constantly tune. It just comes from constraints. Okay, so I will finish here. Thank you. I'm happy to take questions if there are any.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.